Business on Board.
I'm your host, Kerry Hereford-Jones, and it's a real pleasure to welcome you on board as I meet up with a wonderful variety of guests who are all connected in some way, shape or form to the marine world. I'm with Captain John Kidd for today's podcast. John, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
John, just if you wouldn't mind, introduce yourself to us, a sort of a one-minute overview, if you will, condensed as to who you are.
Of course, yeah. So I'm Captain John Kidd, Cowes Harbour Master, work for Cowes Harbour Commission. I've had about 30 years in the marine industry now, both shoreside and afloat. I've had about 5 years of command of different types of vessels, from dredgers to buoy tenders.
Within that time, John, a variety of different craft have been under your command. Give us a taste of some of the things that you've actually had command of.
So my first command was a small multi-cat vessel, 25 by 10. She was a buoy tender and plough dredger, the UKD Sea Lion, for a company called UK Dredging, part of ABP. I was asked to look after it for 2 weeks and ended up there for 2.5 years. Did some really interesting contracts with her. Southern Ireland, went and did some buoy work and dredging in Waterford. And then we did some work with a bigger dredging company, Boscalis, over in northern France. So we did some work for the new container terminal at Calais. But yeah, really interesting work. I've had a year in command of the THV Alert for Trinity House. During that time aboard Alert, I was become known as the bomb master. So in 500 and odd years of Trinity House, I was the first commander to have a World War II bomb come up on top of a sinker. So a sinker is what connects a buoy to the seabed, then there's a riser chain, then the buoy on the top. So it's about a metre square of steel, a big steel lump, perched on the top of a little pile of sand was an 80-20 pencil bomb. So we had to sit for 5 hours off Aldborough, just north of Felixstowe, while the explosives department came up from Portsmouth under blue lights, 5 hours on the motorway at blue lights, to come out and blow up the bomb.
You say that now with a sincere of, you know, kind of, oh, I was just one of those things, but that must have been terrifying.
Well, having worked on dredges, we were quite used to having dredged ordnance on board, but there were set procedures to deal with that. I'd never had it or heard of it in Trinity House. It was Trinity Sunday, so ringing up the office, they were all in church, didn't answer the phone, so we were on our own. Harwich wouldn't let us back into the port with this thing strapped alongside.
So I'm not surprised, John, to be fair.
So, yeah, it was an interesting few hours waiting. Me and the chief engineer managed to get over the sides and lash this thing down with a ratchet strap very, very carefully, because the last thing we wanted it to do was to hit the vessel side and cause any sort of damage. So once the EOD got on board, the RNLI brought them out. The first thing they did, got it on deck and got out a little chipping hammer and started tapping away at it. We're all petrified. But they said, well, it's all right. It's been sat on the seabed for 40 years. It's fine. I wish we'd known that 5 hours earlier. And they discovered what it was. They took it about 500 metres away, strapped some C4 to it, blew it up. And we had fresh cod for dinner that night, which was fantastic.
Every cloud has a silver lining.
Exactly, yes. My next command came when I joined Red Funnel. So I had 2 years in command of the 95-metre car ferries that come in and out of Cowes over to Southampton.
So you've seen it from every perspective. You've been in and out of this harbour. You know this harbour pretty well.
Pretty well. I've also been a pilot here for the last 8 years, so bringing all the commercial ships in and out, tugs, bringing in sort of bulk cargoes. We did a special cargo came in a few years ago, so we had 2 big Rolls-Royce generator engines brought in for the tomato farm out in Arrowton. So that was the largest vessel ever to visit Cowes at 110 metres.
And you were the pilot?
I was the trainee pilot on that. I had Captain Rod Hodgson with me at the time, but yeah, the two of us did that act together. And because of the size of it, the swinging basin is 135 metres, so we had a small tug either end to help turn the vessel. She couldn't take the bottom, so we had to come in at the top of a spring high water, get one engine off, then take her back out to anchor, and then back in the next day for the next one. Goodness, so a real operation.
You earned your beer in the bar afterwards.
Definitely, yeah.
So John, just give us a flavour, if you will, as to the roles and responsibilities then of the Cowes Harbour Master.
So the ultimate aim and the ultimate role for the Harbour Master is overall safety of all the operations on the water. So whether it's be piloting, visiting vessels, dredging, it all comes back to me. So Cowes Harbour is a trust port, and it's set up so we've got a board of trustees. They're the duty holder, so ultimately the buck stops with them. They employ a competent harbour master to act on their behalf and make sure that everything's done safely. So I fulfil that role for them. Part of that role, and when we look at all the powers that we've got in the harbour, in 2012 we did a harbour revision order, which changed our powers from bylaws, which are very, very difficult to update because it takes an act of parliament, to what's called general directions. So these act in exactly the same way as a bylaw. It gives us powers for all sorts of things, so we can control and regulate the passage of vessels in and out of Cowes Harbour to make it as safe as possible, really.
And how long have you been in post now?
It's been a long time. I've got a few more grey hairs, but it's 6 weeks.
6 weeks. Well, it's lovely to be able to talk to you 6 weeks into your new role. The first question has to be, though, of course, is, are you enjoying yourself?
Very much so. So I was at Cowes Harbour before. I did 4 years as Deputy Harbourmaster before taking a bit of time back in the marine industry to gather a bit more experience and knowledge before coming back into this very important role. But it's great. It's very, very challenging. My previous role, whilst very, very important for the safety of mariners with Trinity House, left a little bit to be desired in the terms of self-satisfaction. I like a challenge. I like to pick up a project, see it through, and come out with a good result. That last job didn't quite give me that. So coming back here and having about 60 different plates spinning all at once, you have to wear many, many different hats. As you can imagine, Cowes is a very busy place, from not only the leisure industry, commercial industry, ferries, dredging,
you name it,
it happens in Cowes. And of course, with the gateway from the island to the Solent as well, and as those of you that know the Solent, it's a very, very busy place, particularly in the summer. So Cowes plays quite a vital role in that and the overall safety of those activities.
Let's talk a little bit more about those plates that you end up spinning. What sort of things go on in your normal week like?
So let's just run through last week as an example. So Monday we have a monthly management meeting. So all the site managers and our CEO Gary get together and have a look at what's happened in the last month from terms of safety, any accidents, incidents they need to be aware of, any works in the harbour that's coming on. Dredging, which we've got a big campaign coming up soon. I keep mentioning dredging, but it's quite an important thing. It's on the tongue of most sailors in Cowes. They like to be able to get their bigger yachts in and out of the marinas safely. Yeah. So as well as all the safety aspects, we then look at the businesses. So as a trust port, we run several businesses to support the harbour.
Okay.
And all the money that's earned from those businesses gets put directly back into the harbour for future developments, future safety projects, all that sort of stuff. So it's sort of self-perpetuating, if you like. The more money we earn, the better we can make the harbour. I know people have concerns about harbour dues and mooring fees, etc., but it doesn't go to waste. It's not being split out to shareholders. It all comes back into the harbour. So it's quite an important process, really, and I think it's the best way to run a harbour, because the people that are running it have a real interest in continuing that sort of safety message. And making sure we're still here and still safe and still operating in 100 years' time. So it's a great way to do it, I think.
And during that week, do you get out on the water as well?
I do. So we've got two new seasonal patrol officers that we bring on for the summer months to help with the busy periods. So I was out having a little harbour tour with them, a little tour of the estate to show them what's what and who's who and what pontoons to watch out for some interesting characters, how to deal with the ferries when they're coming in, the red jets when they're turning, all that sort of stuff. So had a couple of hours out on the water. So that was the Monday afternoon. So gone from meeting and big sort of strategic stuff to then dealing with staff and out on the water, being a physical presence in the harbour. We're working on a big emergency exercise that's going to be post-season, because we're all a little bit busy up until that point. But we're going to be simulating an EV fire on one of the red funnel ferries, which is a hot topic at the minute.
Yep.
So we'll have Coast Guard, police, fire, ambulance service, local council, all the resilience officers, Coast Guard, all involved in that, so that should it ever happen, we'll all have a little bit of practice and know roughly what we can and can't do to keep people safe in the harbour. I was then out piloting. So we've got a regular visitor, the City of Chichester. She's a 72 metre dredger that comes in and out. She currently normally runs under a pilot exemption certificate, but that master's on leave, so they've got a temporary guy in. So that means that one of our Cowes pilots has to go out, bring the vessel in, and then take it back out again 3.5 hours later. That was quite a late night for me, that one. Thursday, I was over onto the mainland having a meeting with ABP. So our pilots, because of the shape of our area and the shape of Cowes, the Southampton area, we just sort of border each other. So the competent harbour authorities meet each other. In order to bring a ship into Cowes, we have to bring it through Southampton's area. So all our pilots have to be authorised by ABP. So we had to have a bit of a meeting on how we're going to reshape that in the future. So for any pilots coming in training to be a Cowes pilot are going to have to then do some extra training with Southampton. So that was again another sort of high-level meeting. And then back dealing with, we've got a bit of a project to try and improve safety navigation at night in cows. So I've noticed, certainly from a pilot's point of view, that there's a couple of dark areas that could maybe do some extra navigation lights. So working with our port engineer on going out to get some quotes, figuring out exactly what we need, where we want it, how we're going to make it work. And then Friday we had a visit from a company that's looking to buy one of our older boats. We're looking to sell that on, so a bit of a salesman role as well. As you said, you know, a variety, and that's what keeps me going, really.
Fantastic. Lovely to hear. Thank you for telling us about that. Yeah. It's always, I find, insightful, not just into the role or into the person, but also into how you fit into the whole thing. Let's look at some of the issues that happen within cows, because this always seems to me, having sailed in and out of here for so many years, one of the busiest ports around. Would you agree with that?
We're certainly up there in terms of leisure, but it's the mix that really makes it as busy as it is. Yeah, we've got the car ferries coming in 8 times a day. We've got the red jets coming in maybe 12 times a day. We've then got commercial shipping. We've got small leisure boats. We've got tourist boats with Solent and White Line cruises. And then on top of that, you've got the sailors. We've got the training academies with UKSA with their little ducklings that they tow around. It's a busy place. In the peak of summer, we've got maybe 10,000 movements in a day.
That's what I was going to ask. I mean, that's a lot of boats moving around. And the chain ferry then clanking back and forth in the middle of the river. What are the sort of things you come across or see or hear about that you think that we could learn from this?
So the main thing and the main drive for us at the moment, one of our biggest incident responses is to people with propulsion failure. So they'll break down in the middle of the harbour, the ferry's coming in, tooting 5 short and rapids, please get out of the way. I can't, my engine's broken. It's about getting boat owners, particularly in the leisure world, to just check their boat is up together and fit for purpose, really. What tends to happen, that'll be the first sort of outings after the winter. People will pop the boats in. Yeah, it was fine when I stored it. The fuel will still be fine, even though it's been sat there for 6 months. And they get 10 minutes down the road and things start overheating, running out of fuel, the fuel filter's clogged, the alternator breaks down, the belt pops off. It's those sort of things that we would really, really like to drive home the message to people that it's in your interest to check your boat is safe. Make sure you've got enough fuel, make sure your engine's up together, you've serviced it before you go out. Because the last thing you want to do is get mid-solent and get run over by a big container ship because your engine's broken down and nobody can get to you in time. So it's really important to make those pre-departure checks, if you like.
And the tide runs fairly strongly down the Medina.
Yeah, spring ebb tide at the chain ferry. You can get close to 4 knots, if not over, particularly if you've got a southwesterly wind as well and it's held the tide up and then all of a sudden it comes out in a rush. So obviously we keep a risk assessment register of all the navigational hazards in cows. We can send out messages and notices to mariners, put signs up, but it's the chain ferry. As we just mentioned, the 4 knot tides, spring ebb tides, people forget how far their boat will travel once they stop the engine. The chain ferry has right of way under our general directions, unless it's pre-arranged. So you can call up the chain ferry and ask for permission for them to wait so that you can go through. That's in our general directions, GD number 6, for those that want to look it up. But if you haven't called the chain ferry and asked them to wait for you to come through, you need to stop and make sure that you can turn around and stem the tide until they're clear. We've had so many boats either pinned against the side of the chain ferry, hit the chains, and it causes an awful lot of damage, and it's very, very embarrassing for those that are involved. So if you want to avoid the embarrassment, just be aware of the tide, what it can do, and turn early.
And risk of life, of course, at the end of the day.
Absolutely. The last thing we want in cows is something where somebody is injured or even worse. I've been in command on one of the Red Funnel ferries. People have managed to squeeze through the chain ferry on an ebb tide, forgotten all about the ferry and how you get set onto it. And we've had vessels pinned alongside that physically can't do anything. They're starting to get pushed under. We've had to go down and put lines on it to keep the boat from disappearing while we're waiting for HM1 or somebody else with a big powerful rib to come and rescue them. There's very little we can do on the ferry other than stand and watch and try and offer some support.
We're tinning some pretty serious stuff here, aren't we? This is fundamentally a risk to life and limb if you get it wrong, and you can get it wrong. It's so easy and it happens so quickly.
It does. You're absolutely right. But the information is out there. There's an awful lot of information on our website that will tell you all about the tides. We put out local notices to mariners every year to highlight these things, particularly to do with the chain ferry. it's a dangerous stretch of water if you get it wrong.
There are things that boat owners could do to help themselves, to help you, to make things easier. And I'm presuming, I'm thinking now about the Round the Island race, and I'm thinking now about Cows Week. All those issues you get throughout the normal year all concentrate into 1 or 2 weeks.
It's crazy. If you looked at it from a risk assessment point of view, you probably wouldn't do it. Luckily, unluckily for us, the event organisers are those that hold the risk. They are the duty holders for keeping their competitors safe. There's lots of systems in place before these events. So already now we're talking to Cows Week about their risk assessment. They submit it to us as the Harbour Authority. We look through that with a fine-tooth comb to make sure that they've assessed all the risks properly and have all the right control measures in place. We've got about 480 boats planning to enter this year, as far as we're aware. So it's a bit of a quieter year, but the risks when racing, as you may well appreciate, are quite high. There's a lot that can go wrong when you're out racing, particularly when people are focused on their own boat and not aware of what else is going on around them. You chuck into the mix commercial vessels that have the right of way around that prohibited area off Cowes, up around Bramble Turn and into Southampton. You know, anything over 220 metres, if you get in the way, somebody's going to come and toot the horn and get very cross at you. And a few years ago, somebody got that wrong with the Hannah Knutson. From a risk point of view, we help the clubs, the organisers, just fine-tune those risk assessments, and we help support them in any way we can without committing ourselves too much, because we still need to look after the harbour itself and not necessarily what's happening out in the Solent. So as part of that process, we'll have a representative down on the squadron for Cows Week particularly, and round the island. So there is a bit of a liaison between the assets in the port. So our patrol ribs will also have a look at the ferries coming in and out and speak to the ferries directly. There's normally a Red Funnel rep there as well, and we can liaise through them to make sure that the timings are such that hopefully the ferry doesn't come across the start line just as a fleet of boats are setting off. Doesn't always work, but we try and deconflict as much as we can to keep the racing safe and enjoyable for the competitors.
And recognising that there are two sides to the story here, and there are two groups of people here that both need to be satisfied if at all possible.
Yes, it's a difficult one to manage, but the event organisers are very well practised at those events. Mm. Occasionally it does go a bit wrong, but we'll investigate those incidents as the Harbour Authority and try and learn whatever we can and then help the event organisers, the clubs, to make things better and safer for those people taking part.
So when we get the phone call from the United Nations needing you for the next ambassador, we'll pass it straight through to you.
Absolutely, yeah, I'll just add it to the list of jobs. Yeah.
I'm going to talk now a little bit about the physicality of the harbour. And the first thing that strikes anybody coming here that hasn't perhaps been here for a decade is that massive breakwater out there. A couple of things, first of all, why was that built? What was the background to that? And what impact has it had in general terms to Cowes Harbour?
Okay, so everyone thinks it was a new project, but it actually dates back to the late 1890s. We've got some of the original drawings up in the Harbour Office, which are fascinating, for a breakwater in that position, slightly longer. So it predates the old straight breakwater that runs out of East Cowes. And it was to try and protect the harbour from northerly and northeasterly winds, which blow right into the mouth of the Medina. So it wasn't a new idea, but there was the old breakwater now that runs out of East Cowes to protect from some of the tidal effects on particularly the ebb tide running across the harbour entrance. But in the early sort of mid-2000s, Stuart McIntosh, who was the harbour master at the time, put quite a lot of time and effort and money into fulfilling this dream, really, of having a fully protected harbour. So the idea really is to protect the smaller outer harbour moorings, where the day boats tend to be, from northerly and northeasterly winds. It's had some interesting effects in the harbour. If you talk to anyone from the Island Sailing Club, anything from the northeast funnels through that tiny gap between the breakwaters straight onto their pontoon, making it very uncomfortable for people there. Not ideal. And the last talk I did at the Island Sailing Club, they asked, are you ever going to close that gap? No. We can't, really. We can't. The tidal effects is the one that really stands out in people's minds, and you see the physical effects of what the changes to the tides have occurred when you're out, particularly about 2 hours before a spring high water. You'll probably be aware of the strange sort of tidal anomaly around the Isle of Wight, where the flood tide comes up from the west. We get it up the Solent, sort of through the Needles Channel and flooding from the west. At the same time, it's going around the south of the island and then tries to flood from the east, filling in that sort of hole in the middle. So we get that high water stand for about 2 hours at Southampton and Cowes. But the effect that has is you get a sort of a fake ebb off the entrance, let's say about 2.5 to 2 hours before high water, particularly noticeable on the spring tides. you'll notice just off the breakwater, right at the mouth of the sort of main fairway, you'll get an ebb tide starting quite strong, and then it will work its way out, sort of overriding the flood tide from the west. So bringing a ship in or a yacht, you'll be pointing sort of down towards the west, stemming the tide, crabbing your way in, and then within a matter of about 5 metres, it'll completely flip from the other direction because it runs just about east-west there. If you don't know it's happening, it can be a real shock, and you can suddenly find yourself getting down, set down towards the squadron. So it's something to be aware of when you're visiting Cowes, but that breakwater has accentuated it a little bit, whereby it's deflecting the tide to the north of the breakwater, so you get it a little bit more prominently just at 1 and 2 buoy until that real ebb kicks in. But that gap between the new breakwater and the old breakwater allows that sort of fake ebb to funnel through and straight down the eastern small boat channel, and about by between 4A and 4 you'll get a cross tide. And it can be, on a good spring tide, it can be up to about 2 knots. And it does a very, very strange thing. There's a brilliant video on our website that shows exactly what the tide does when it comes in through that entrance, because it bounces off just by the red jet and then sort of does a gyre around in both directions, so it splits. So you get some running out to the entrance, some running down towards the bigger car ferry. It bounces off and you end up with a sort of circular motion. So if you're bringing a big ship in from at that state of the tide, from in between 1 and 2, you'll have that weird flip-flop of tide at the entrance that you have to be aware of. There's a tidal shadow just to the west of the end of the breakwater, so your bow comes into dead water, your stern's still out in a fake ebb tide, so it's trying to sort of turning you to port into the main harbour moorings. Very, very shallow there, don't want to be there. You're then coming into this cross current, which is trying to put you onto the red jet terminal. A little bit further down, you then get this weird sort of back eddy that's trying to put you onto number 6 and buoy and the big car ferry. And then you've got a chain ferry to deal with as well. So it's very, very tricky. And for those that don't know it, it can catch you out. And chuck into the mix, it's Cowes Week and we've got 500 yachts all coming out to try and race, and you're trying to come in. Yeah, we try and deconflict that as much as possible. We'll put off the commercial ships, but Red Funnel still need to get in, run a timetable, so it's tricky.
So from the bridge of a ferry, or from the bridge of a dredger, how does that look to you when you're looking down at us in a small sailing boat?
Cowes Harbour is a very small place when you're on a ship. With the widest point of the fairway is only about 85 metres, the narrowest is about 60 metres. So when you're on a ship that's 95 metres long and 15 metres wide, and you're 40 foot up in the air, looking down on a little boat that's coming towards you, you suddenly lose sight of it very, very quickly. And all you can see is maybe the top of a mast. That's quite disconcerting, because although you hope they know what they're doing and they've seen you, it's not always the case. You need to think, certainly on a bigger ship, a long way ahead. For the commercial ships that come in and out of Cowes, we run the pilot boat ahead of us to try and sort of gently nudge people out of the way. Without that service, it would be very, very difficult. Having been captain at Red Funnel and bringing some of the big raptors in and out, the number of times where you've had to take the speed off, five short and rapids, it happens more often than you would like, and it really focuses your mind. The people on the yachts sort of look behind them. It tends to be people going the way. People, particularly on yachts, tend to forget to look behind them to see what's coming up. And it's normally those that look round and see the bow of a 95-metre ferry bearing down them, and there's panic then. So it's interesting from that size. Thinking ahead and knowing what's coming is part of our sort of bread and butter. We're aware of it, but it's those that are on the other vessels that aren't aware of it. That's the real issue, and you can't always guarantee what they're going to do.
There is that kind of, oh my goodness me, you know, explosive, what do I do next? And really, what you're saying is get into shallow water. And we talked earlier about, of course, about how shallow that actually is where the small boats are. That is pretty shallow in there. Nothing's really going to damage you or get to you if you can get in there okay.
Certainly up to the Eastern Channel from the chain ferry, there is plenty of water outside the main channel. So if you can, just avoid that risk. It is safe. The boats are floating there. If they can float, unless you've got a serious keel underneath you can also float. And it's better just to get out of the way if you can, and if it's safe to do so.
The environment high on the Cowes Harbour Authority's list of actions now. What's on the plan? What's next for you to look at and to try and improve in terms of the harbour?
We're a little bit limited in what we can do, but there are certainly things that we're looking at. And we've got our overarching strategic plan. Big part, which everyone's trying to do, is become carbon neutral. So we're looking at many different schemes. So the solarisation of the Kingston boatyard, we've got some big buildings up there. The roofs are ideally to house solar panels. We're actually hoping that if we can get all that sort of signed off, obviously it costs a little bit of money, but as I said before, all the mooring fees and harbour dues that come in go towards projects like that. But if we can get that signed off, we're actually hoping to become carbon positive, whereby we can generate more power than the site is using, and we can then feed that back into the grids and the structure on the island if we can. Other things that we're doing from an environmental point of view, dredging, it's an ongoing issue in Cowes. You know, people historically have dug big ditches and turned them into marinas out of what was naturally salt marshes and muddy banks. Nature will always want to fill them back in again, so it's a task that'll certainly outsee my lifetime. There'll always be dredging. But what we're looking at doing is using some of that dredge material to rebuild some of the salt marshes down towards the Folly. So these have been eroding over many, many years, and it's a really important habitat. We've got SSSI classification, so that's a site of, you know, special scientific interest. There's some sort of reasonably rare breeds that live down there, particularly plants and animals. So we're hoping to, if we can get the approval from the MMO, we have to have a license to be able to do this, is actually pump ashore some of the dredge material that we're taking from the marinas and things in Cowes to reuse that then to rebuild the salt marshes. Mm. So that should have a really positive effect on the environment and the natural environment in the River Medina.
What's your own personal agenda looking like? What is it you hope personally to achieve over the next sort of 4 or 5 years?
So the main thing for me, I'm a local boy, I live in Cowes. I've got a real interest in the harbour itself, not only from a safety point of view, but just from it's a really nice place to be. I love the town, I love the vibrancy, particularly in the summer. It's great seeing all these people out enjoying the boats. So my key thing actually is a bit of consistency now and a bit of stability for Cowes Harbour. There's been a bit of turbulence with changes of harbour masters since the long-standing Stuart McIntosh left. He did just over 20 years in the role. It would be nice to think that certainly for the next 5-10 years we can keep the same harbour master, the same team. We've got a really, really good, vibrant team in there now with Gary as our CEO. He's not from the marine world, he's airports and was very successful in running a car museum actually up north. And he's a real breath of fresh air. Not to discount anything Stuart did, but he was wearing two hats, he was CEO and harbour master. Gary's got a real focus on the business side of things. And he's got a real keen eye on the future of Cowes Harbour, what it is we can do to make sure we're here for the next 100 years and further on. He's really keen for us to look at everything with a fresh pair of eyes and say, okay, what can we do in Cowes? What can we do to make it better? We know historically there's been a shortage of berths and moorings in Cowes. We're very limited on space. We can't build any more marinas. There's houses and factories and shipbuilding and all the rest of it. So it's what can we do to eke out any more berths, any more facilities to help reduce the waiting lists for places like Shepherd's and Cowes Yacht Haven and East Cowes Marina, and try and get some more people in. We're also putting a lot of money and thought into bringing young people into the marine industry. So we're running an apprenticeship scheme, and we're actually supporting the younger underprivileged kids from the island, particularly from Cowes if we can, to get them into the Sea Change program with UKSA and give them a taste of what's available out on the water. We're hoping that one or two of those will then go on to maybe off, you know, start an apprenticeship with us or go off to sea and then come back in the future to help carry on the good name of Cowes
and take over your job.
Hopefully, yeah, if we can get the right one. Yeah, I'm sending my eldest boy off to sea very shortly.
Does he know?
Not yet. But he's earmarked for 10 years' time to come and be the deputy.
Captain John Kidd, thank you so very much indeed for joining us for today's podcast. Thank you for listening to today's show. I hope you've enjoyed it. Please do leave me some feedback, and if you feel so disposed, perhaps rate the show with 5 stars. Whichever platform you use to listen to your favourite podcasts, if you'd like to hear more from some of my featured and I think fascinating guests, just search for Kerry Herford Jones. That's C-E-R-I Herford Jones, or Business on Board. Let's catch up again soon.